Our study tonight is out of Isaiah chapter 39, verses 1 to 8. That includes the entire chapter. Hezekiah's failure to trust God humbly in his future. All right. God knows the end from the beginning because he can see everything in the future. He can graciously prepare us to counter temptations that lie ahead of us in life's pathway that we might handle them well. Well, once God warns us to prepare for future temptations, we are highly responsible to rely on his power to overcome those temptations. What Hezekiah failed to do in Isaiah 39, verses 1 to 8, and of course it offers a great lesson for us. We can learn from the successes of the saints in the past, and we can also learn from their failures. And some of the best lessons come through learning about the failures of the saints of God. I want to read the chapter, and then we'll look at it. Isaiah chapter 39, at that time, Merodach-Baladan, the son of Baladan, king of Babylon, sent letters and a present to Hezekiah, for he had heard that he had been sick and was recovered. And Hezekiah was glad of them and showed them the house of his precious things, the silver, the gold, the spices, the precious ointment, and all the house of his armor, and all that was found in his treasures. There was nothing in his house nor in all his dominion that Hezekiah did not show. Then came Isaiah the prophet unto King Hezekiah and said unto him, What said these men, and from whence came they unto thee? Hezekiah said, They are come from a far country unto me, even from Babylon. Then said he, What have they seen in your house? And Hezekiah answered, All that is in mine house they have seen. There is nothing among my treasures that I have not showed them. Then said Isaiah to Hezekiah, Hear the word of the Lord of hosts. Behold, the days come that all that is in thine house, and that which thy fathers have laid up in store until this day, shall be carried off to Babylon. Nothing shall be left, saith the Lord. And of thy sons that shall issue from thee, which thou shalt beget, shall they take away. And they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. Then said Hezekiah to Isaiah, Good is the word of the Lord which thou hast spoken. He said, Moreover, for there shall be peace and truth in my days. Okay, we learned in our past lesson from Isaiah chapter 38 that Hezekiah had learned in his life-threatening trial of illness that God wanted him humbly to rely on him to overcome future strong temptations to ruin his pride. That was the goal. That was the lesson. Now, that temptation came in the form of the event that is recorded in Isaiah chapter 39, verse 1. It says, At that time, Merodach-Baladan, the son of Baladan, king of Babylon, sent letters and a present to Hezekiah, for he'd heard that he'd been sick and was recovered. Now, that temptation was a lot more than meets the eye here in the Old Testament that we have. We get a lot more information from secular records, and we find out that there was a tremendous amount of intrigue involved. Merodach-Baladan of Babylon sent letters and a gift to Judah's king Hezekiah upon hearing that he had been severely ill, but that he had recovered from the illness. The event may sound harmless on the surface, but there was much intrigue involved by the Babylonians. Merodach-Baladan, here in the Hebrew Bible, according to the Babylonian language, was Marduk-Apal-Iddina in secular history, and he had twice before this tried to break away from Assyrian domination. And he had once actually conquered the city of Babylon, which was under Assyrian domination at the time. Remember, Assyria came before Babylon as far as being a world empire. They existed as nations. In fact, Babylon existed as a city-state as far back as the time of Abraham, but it hadn't grown to be very, very big. It was still on the growth, but Assyria was the dominant power, and Babylon was sort of the up-and-coming power. Well, after his second reign of 9 months, in 703 to 702, this king, Marduk-Apal-Iddina, was deported by King Assyria, or the king of Assyria, Sennacherib, and he went to Elam. And while he was in Elam, and while he was still known as the king of Babylon, he actively tried to form an alliance with other nations to throw off the Assyrian yoke. Undoubtedly, his friendly visit after Hezekiah's illness was intended to persuade the king of Judah to join the rebel alliance in the fight against Assyria. So they're not just coming to give him a present. I mean, they're not going to make a trip all the way from Babylon just to say, congratulations, you're better. They obviously have something else in mind. and what they had in mind. They were trying to elicit his support so that they could get a whole bunch of these kingdoms to rise up against Assyria and attack Assyria. In other words, they were trying to get Hezekiah to join them, to make a treaty with them, so as to attack Assyria and throw them off. That's what's going on. So it was imperative that Hezekiah follow God in responding to this envoy. For God was using Assyria to punish the whole region, according to chapter 10, meaning that the visit was also God's test of Hezekiah's heart. See, the last thing God wanted was Hezekiah to try to join and try to fight Assyria. He was using Assyria as his tool to punish these other nations. And then when God brought Assyria down to the city of Jerusalem, then God was going to trounce Assyria himself. And that was the plan of God. God did not want Hezekiah getting his fingers in the pie. Hezekiah was supposed to follow the Lord. Now, Hezekiah did not know what was up the sleeve of these men when they first came to him, but they probably revealed it to him. However, Hezekiah did not carefully, closely follow the Lord in his response to the Babylonian envoy. But he welcomed them gladly as if they were close associates when their intent was to drag Hezekiah and Judah into an unbiblical alliance against a king whom God was using to punish other nations. So relying on his own judgment versus humbly continuing to follow God in line with the lesson of his recovery from illness, Hezekiah proudly, carelessly, tried to mimic his predecessor, King Solomon, when the Queen of Sheba visited him by showing off all the precious things in his kingdom. I'll go back and look at this event. And Solomon left quite an impression with the kings that followed him, and all the kings after him kind of compared themselves to Solomon. Everybody wanted to be a big shot like Solomon. And what did Solomon do? Well, when the Queen of Sheba visited him, notice chapter 10, verse 1 of 1 Kings. When the Queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, she came to test him with hard questions. She came to Jerusalem with a very great train, with camels that bear spices, very much gold, precious stones. When she was come to Solomon, she communed with him all that was in her heart. And Solomon told her all her questions. There was not anything hid from the king which he did not tell her. And when the Queen of Sheba had seen all of Solomon's wisdom and all the house that he had built, the food of his table, the sitting of his servants, the attendance of his ministers, their apparel, his cupbearers, and his scent by which he went up to the house of the Lord, there was no more spirit in her. And she said to the king, "It was a true report that I had heard in my own land of thy acts and thy wisdom. Howbeit, I did not believe the words until I came, and my eyes have seen it. And behold, the half was not told me. Thy wisdom and prosperity exceedeth the fame which I heard. Happy are thy men, happy are these thy servants which stand continually before thee, and that hear thy wisdom. Blessed be the Lord thy God, which delighteth in thee, to set thee on the throne of Israel, because the Lord loved Israel forever, therefore making thee king, to do judgment and justice." So that was an event that was never forgotten by the kings. Hezekiah really wanted to be like that. So what he did, in order to impress these people, he tried to show off his realm. He was acting out of pride. He wasn't acting like Solomon. We don't get the implication that Solomon ever showed things off. All he did was answer her questions. But the Queen of Sheba noticed everything that was going on. She noticed the way he was functioning. He wasn't trying to show it off. It was just there. And that impressed her immensely, because the wisdom of Solomon was coming out in how he'd organized everything, the artistry of everything that was about the organization. And that's impressed him. So this man was functioning on a completely different frame of mind than was King Solomon. So God's prophet then came to Hezekiah to ask what the men in Babylon, the Babylonian envoy, had said to him and from where they'd come. And it's interesting that Hezekiah answered the latter question only, namely that they had come from the distant country of Babylon. He didn't want to talk about what the men had said to him, because the men obviously had probably tried to get him to join them, and Hezekiah knew that that's not right biblically. In fact, Isaiah in Isaiah chapter 31:1 pronounced a woe to those who went down to Egypt trying to make a treaty with the people down there. So Hezekiah was reluctant. to report what the envoy had wanted, for they had asked him to join ranks with them to counter a Syrian violation of the law. And Hezekiah knew Isaiah would have objected and critiqued Hezekiah's considering such a nation. Back in chapter 31, verse 1, I'll just briefly read that. Woe to them that go down to Egypt for help and stay on horses and trust in chariots, because they are many in horsemen, because they are very strong, but they do not look unto the Holy One of Israel, neither seek the Lord. So, Isaiah then asked Hezekiah what the men from Babylon had seen in his house. Hezekiah answered that he had shown them everything of all his treasures, a very proud thing for him to do. And of course, you know what pride is in the mind of God. God hates it, absolutely hates it. That was the fall of Satan. He said, I shall be like the Most High, and so forth, according to the records of Scripture. So, for Hezekiah's proudly acting independently of the Lord before these pagan men of intrigue versus closely following the Lord, especially in light of his learned lesson of his previous healing, Isaiah pronounced God's judgment. All the treasures that his fathers had laid up until Hezekiah's era would be carried away to Babylon, and some of his sons would be taken to that land to serve in the king's court there. Now that was actually fulfilled. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, those were sons of the king. They were actually princes. They were of the royal seed. And not too many people know that, but it's there in the Daniel chapter 1. So Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were four of the young men who were taken to Babylon and served. They were the descendants of this particular king. Now, this was an amazing prophecy for Assyria, not Babylon, was then the dominant Middle Eastern power. To make a prediction that Babylon would come and conquer Jerusalem was very unusual at the time. Hezekiah errantly responded to Isaiah, claiming that this prophecy was good and that its prediction would not be fulfilled in his lifetime, so that he would enjoy peace and truth in his days. And of course, that's a very selfish statement. He should have been grieving over the fact that this was not going to be a positive future for his descendants and the people after him. But Hezekiah had a shift. He'd shifted in his mind to become self-centered and proud instead of being humble and concerned about other people. And that's a death knell. So Hezekiah significantly failed his test of temptation for which God had given him ample warning. Tragic, tragic. So by neglecting to heed God's previous warning, that he humbly follow the Lord in his future, Hezekiah carelessly acted proudly before the Babylonians, who were trying to woo him by intrigue into a sinful alliance against God's will. In so doing, Hezekiah incurred God's discipline that would negatively affect Judah's future. So, if God in the past or before warns us to heed him in a future issue, when we face it, we must very carefully obey him. I've had this experience at times where the Lord, not too often, but the Lord will shoot a little volley across the bow of my boat and give me a heads-up warning. And that's always a signal to watch out, because there's something coming up ahead that is big, and I got to watch it. And boy, does he want you to watch it, because often the stakes are extremely high. So if you ever get this warning from the Lord about watching out for the future, pay close attention to it. And if you run into that kind of a temptation or test in the future, make sure that you slow down, back up, and follow the Lord closely. Be very careful, because the evil one is very powerful and the stakes are very high. And it could be very, very costly, very, very troublesome. So God help us to pay attention to the warnings that he gives us. They're for our good. He gives these warnings in love. He wants us to succeed. He doesn't want us to fail. He doesn't want us to sin. So if he warns us, we better pay attention.